Hey guys, quick thanks to everybody who supports this show and others on the Frog Pants Network by going to patreon.com/frogpants. It means a great deal and we love making film sacks, so consider contributing if you haven't already. And to those who have, we love you. That's patreon.com/frogpants. And thanks.
I regret to report that all diplomatic avenues with the Kilrathi have been exhausted. It is now clear they have no interest in coexisting with us or any other race. It is my sad duty to inform you that as of 6 a.m. this morning, we are formally at war with the Kilrathi.
That guy's got a serious attitude problem. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sap. Sap? Film Sack, episode 273. Jeez, take the holidays off and you start losing your mind. 273. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian Bleached Shaggy Hair Dunaway.
Ah. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Wait.
Scoob!
Why didn't you guys tell me we were fighting cat people? I could have solved this problem with a smart-ass Matthew Lillard, and a laser pointer. Instead, we waste 100 minutes with some story about a space muggle with space muggle? Yeah. With force nav powers. Spoilers. It wasn't great.
A space muggle?
Space muggle. All right. Was like half.
Okay. Oh, I see. Because I thought muggles were full not magic. Are they?
No, they're half.
Can you be a half magic muggle? Oh, you have a muggle
mom.
Right.
You're right. You're actually right.
I don't know. Listen, I'm no Harry Potter expert.
It's the first episode of 2016.
Well, I do know this. Randy Beard Like a Kilrathi Jordan is here.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. I need you guys to pay attention.
Listening.
Because what we've got here is the second best podcast on the Frog Pants Network. Scott Johnson here, second best podcaster. We're recording on the second best day of the week, and I'm delivering the second best greeting. This is the second best movie I've seen in the last 48 hours. I just drank a cup of the second best coffee I've had all day. And F your questions that I'm raising right now. Oh, look, a bottle of scotch.
All right.
Is that coffee or scotch you got in that cup?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're grinding up some crack to put
F
in there.
F your questions.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Finally with us, Brian Abogi, coming in at 6 o'clock hot, Ibbit.
Ooh, give me a Kleenex. I hope our listeners will appreciate the cultural significance of the film that we're about to discuss in today's show, because once this movie left theaters in 1999, it ceased to exist.
It really did.
Don't play that game with me.
It kind of did. Remember, this was one of those, hey, where are you going to see a Star Wars Episode 1 trailer?
Right, where you see the trailer, yeah.
And people would come in droves and fill out the seats, and it was packed, and you'd think, man, they sure sold a lot of tickets, and then people got up and left after the trailer.
Is there some sort of irony that this movie ended up being worse than the trailer that everybody watched?
Right.
Well, it's a good question. Like, if I hold Episode 1 up against this, though... Yeah. I'm not sure I like this less than Episode 1.
What? Nah, I don't know.
I'd put him about in the same boat, because look, you can pod race yourself to a little better movie. You can have your Darth Maul, and those things are cool, but this wasn't any better or worse than that, in my opinion.
What are we doing?
Might be the only
How are we already... Episode 1 is so much better than this movie. How are we doing that?
I think saying so much better is a stretch. I think
I don't know about so much better.
Maybe okay, maybe a little better, but not a great deal better. I mean, they're both shit. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, they're both shit.
Okay.
This is just one step above sci-fi movie of the week.
It's a little TV. You're not wrong.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the... probably the big difference between the two is production quality. Mm-hmm. Like, at least a sci-fi channel movie, you can see a mile coming because, you know, it looks like somebody's photoshopped a giant worm in front of the car that it's destroying. But this one just lacks the soul, like many sci-fi channel TV shows, but actually has pretty good special effects.
For the most part, like 99 level stuff, it's not bad.
Yeah. The only thing I faulted it for special effects was they used that whole space explosion from the 80s that we had. I mean, every one of them like that space explosion. It was not.
Yeah, and the blue is like blue fire and weirdly overlaid. And yeah, that's a thing you'd see in this and that you'd see in a lot of movies from the era. I hesitate to call it an era, but what money they spent on special effects, they saved on costume design, which we'll get to in a minute. Before all of that, Scott Fletcher will explain more.
Wing Commander. In the 27th century, Earth's only hope against the vicious Kilrathi Empire are two talented young fighter pilots. The guys, with their beautiful, tough-as-nails wing commander, Angel, try to fend off the enemy and warn Earth of an impending attack.
Okay. So Kilrathi, I want to just stop right there for a second.
Yeah, please do.
Not because it's not so much because the special effects or the makeup effects or whatever were the worst thing ever. Not so much because of that, really? Although that is true. But because my recollection of those in the Wing Commander games proper were that they were lion people.
Exactly.
Do I have that memory right?
I remember it was more of a space lion thing going on in the regular, but for some reason they decided to go with
time I ever saw the Saberon in World of Warcraft, yeah. I thought about Wing Commander.
Yeah, I think that's okay. So my memory's not that bad on those. The original, we're talking about the Chris Roberts series of games, the Wing Commander series, which I think I played the last one I would have played was like Wing Commander 3, I think.
And by the way, thanks everybody in the world for making Chris Roberts wealthy.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good job. Good job. He is a millionaire now, multimillionaire because of the Star Citizen business. But he directed this, and it's the only film he ever directed. He did some other producing, and we didn't notice it, but the 2004 Punisher we reviewed here was co-produced.
Can anyone name a video game developer who's directed a feature film? I'm having a really hard time. I've been thinking about this for days.
I thought about the same thing, and I couldn't come up with anybody.
There's one that goes the other direction, like a director that has tried their hand at... video game.
Yeah, Lucas has probably done something.
Yeah, developing, I guess, is a whole different animal than, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I like to think of Douglas Adams as a video game developer, but not really. And he's an author, and he occasionally directed like a radio show, but it doesn't come anywhere close to. This is a person who made video games, and I mean made the design of video games. Mm-hmm. And then went and made this movie. Yeah. I don't know who else comes close.
Nobody that I know of, but it's also kind of impressive. And that he was allowed to do it, that they let him do it. And it's not me being snarky saying, oh man, Chris Roberts, stick to video games, dude. Although I would say, dude, Chris Roberts, stick to video games. But it's not that bad. I mean, it's TV quality. Like we keep bringing up the TV comparison. Yeah. It feels like a made for sci-fi 2-hour one-off.
And I watch this
every sufficient.
Week on Sci-Fi Channel.
It's sufficiently made.
It's a reminder that when you have a cinematographer and an editor who have done movies before, you can end up with results that look like you've done a movie before.
That's a really good point. I don't think editing gets near enough. And next week when we talk about Bad Boys 2, I want to talk a lot about editing. Lack of it, maybe.
Right.
But also
talk about something that didn't really exist.
Or how much quick cut editing you can fit into 2.5 hours. but it does, you forget how important editors are, and probably Wing Commander benefits from that more than anything we've seen lately, because it's not like anything special really is happening on screen, but none of it felt like super amateurish to me. I mean, a few things did. The Kilrathi were terrible. Any scenes with them were pretty bad. But no worse than like a cheesy Star Trek episode or something.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like for me, the worst directed scene was the one with the hull breach and they're going to get sucked out if they don't find a way whatever was going on there. And the reason it felt badly directed to me was because I never got a sense of the whole thing. I got Freddie Prinze Jr. holding on to something on the floor to keep from flying out. And I got Matthew Lillard screaming at people to help him and try to get to him and keep him from being killed. But the whole scene, I couldn't put it together. I never felt like you're showing me where on the ship are we and what's happening here.
How big is this hull breach and why are people who are 10 feet away not affected like Prinze Jr. who is 5 feet away?
So that really comes to the director. And I feel like maybe a director's excuse is, well, I just didn't get those shots. I came away without the footage I needed to tell you the whole story in that scene. Somebody who knew what they were doing, they would have gotten the shots.
Probably. I mean, he was getting to live out a bit of a dream here for himself, having immersed himself so much in his own creation for so many years, and then be able to realize a film adaptation was probably a pretty big deal for him, but also, you know, a little over his head in terms of scope. But when that, my only problem with that scene isn't so much where people are placed or the difference between the suction on Freddie Prinze Jr. and the suction on all other souls.
Freddie Prinze Jr. has his own gravity.
I guess so. He's made of paper or something.
Understand.
But the part that bothered me was the solution, which is, this big giant door. Oh, it was slipped out of our hands. Okay, now it's flying through the air. Oh, we got lucky. It hit right where the hole is. Everyone back to work. It's fine. Yeah. Move along. Like, that was dumb.
Yeah, the computer even confirms for you. Instantly, the computer says a hull breach is no longer in progress.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no seriously? Longer do we need a hull evacuation. Everything's fine. Everyone go. Yeah, like, come on, man.
Like, how does that computer work, by the way? Yeah. Like, its sensors are built into every molecule of the ship. How does it work that it immediately knew?
You're talking about
watching the same movie we are.
Yep.
Hey, man, you're talking about 1999. We were still sweating it because we hadn't been smart to put a 4-digit code for a year. We were still doing 2-digit codes for years.
We still didn't know how computers worked.
Yeah, right? That's true.
It was a mystery.
But we had other things that seemed to handle this stuff better and even more, you know, stuff that was even more fantasy-based, like The Matrix, for example, which really holds up all this time. No, it was 99.
Right.
Same year.
I think this is more influenced. Yeah. I think this is more influenced by Starship Troopers, which came out 2 years prior.
Yeah, 96 or so.
Yeah, and this very much felt like, hey, we got this. Okay, we want to cast the young upcoming stars who have mostly been in rom-coms and stuff. Let's throw them into a space adventure. Why not Wing Commander? Perfect. That's their generation's thing. I think it was.
Was it though? Because listen, what you're talking about is a relatively, in the world of video games, a relatively obscure PC-only experience, although later 3DO and some other stuff got Wing Commander 3. But they were not the mainstream success you would see on a Nintendo or Sony console or something. These were like, I don't know, it's like Command and Conquer.
Well, we'd already done Mario, so I mean.
Well, Command and Conquer is like a big deal, right? But it's a big deal in 90s PC circles, which is a very different world than the rest of the gaming world. Now, there's a lot more crossover today. It's a lot different today. I don't even think it compares today. But back in the day, Wing Commander would have been considered this weird offshoot and barely anyone would recognize it for what it was, which is based on a video game, except for us, because, you know, we know these things.
Maybe that's my problem, because I thought it was a very big deal. I was like, hey, sweet.
Yeah.
Wing Commander.
Well, I mean, Chris Roberts would have you believe it's the biggest deal of all time. In fact, he would still have you believe that, so you will give him money so he can still add tens of millions of dollars to a game that isn't out yet.
I'm glad to find out that it's 99, because when it completely shoehorned in bullet time shot, which made no sense, did not need to be in the film, felt to me like it was tacked on. And now I'm pretty sure they went and saw The Matrix and thought, oh, well, before we release our movie,
we gotta do it.
Yeah, but notice they didn't do the full 360 one that they had for Trinity.
No, it's about 75 degrees.
It's like eight cameras. In this brightly lit room. Beep, 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 beep. Okay, we're done. Now everyone go back to what you're doing. And the funny thing is, wasn't it supposed to just sort of show time, not time travel, but like
the time jump. Yeah,
the warpy, jumpy thing.
Right.
Whatever was happening there.
But they had already shown us a jump, and it happened totally differently.
Well,
the first jump in the film, which is the first big buildup to huge excitement, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know if these three guys are going to make it through this thing that nobody's tested and done, and maybe Freddie Prinze Jr. is magic.
Yeah.
That jump happens with them screaming and darkness, and then you find out they're okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's because they popped out in your gravity well. They didn't have no choice, right?
I love it when you try to make internal logic consistent. Right. It's so adorable.
Well, all right, look, as someone who loves anything to do with science fiction and loves it when movies and video games, for that matter, like we're talking a bunch of smack here, but I actually love what the Wing Commander series and like Freelancer and more modern games like Rebel Galaxy and even upcoming Star Citizen and even, you know, Elite Dangerous. These games are really, really good at establishing an enormous space and cool ships in space and how you got to get from one place to the other, and and applying concepts cool like pirate. Well, not in this movie, no. But, you know, like there are pirates in this world and they're out to do this and there's these factions and that stuff's always fun, always cool. This is not a great example of that, but you can still feel a little bit of that. You can feel a little bit of Chris Roberts' like vision for an expansive galaxy where humanity has gone well beyond its star.
You know, we should definitely name its influences, right?
Yeah.
Can everybody name the influences on this thing?
All right, so you got your Battlestar Galactica for sure.
Yeah.
Starship Troopers.
Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Starship Troopers, Star Wars. Hey, I'm of the opinion that you got a little bit of a Rick Moranis influence. If you click on the link I just put in your in the thing.
The space probe thing when he seems super. Oh, go ahead. Dune. I'm sorry.
No, just click that link, and when he turns to the side, that's Freddie Prinze Jr. His little eyeglass thing makes him look like, hey, where's Gozer? I'm the gatekeeper, man.
Oh, I can see that.
Anyway,
that's funny. So, yeah, I guess the thing monocle. Is that Dune? Is that the Dune influence?
I think so. I really do. I feel like over and over, I kept feeling like the pilgrims versus a normal people thing was a nod to Dune.
I'm going to go with Ice Pirates was a huge influence.
Well, Ice Pirates.
I'm kidding, but I mean,
I agree with you. That kind of like young swashbuckling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's the youthfulness and that is very, I get the vibe from that too, from Ice Pirates.
I don't remember enough about Ice Pirates to be able to say.
God, we need to sack that movie.
We do really bad.
Yes.
It's such a fantastic, weird ride. I loved it.
If it's out there, we'll find it.
Now with Wing Commander, I had a little bit of trouble with how much they kept jumping in between their kind of almost subgenres, where it was like sometimes it was a submarine story, sometimes it was a sail kind of story, and it was like pirate story, and I was like, choose your
Academy story.
Yeah, choose it.
Oh,
choose
yeah.
one.
Young, inexperienced pilots suddenly thrown into the fray.
Right.
That's why I have a hard time with comparing this to Star Wars, because, you know, he wanted it to be his Star Wars, but that is a story. Episode 4 is a story that is on rails. It starts here. It's going there. There's going to be this conflict and this resolution, you know, boom, all the way through. This movie also wants to set up like a mystery. And you're kind of like wondering who's who and what's going to happen. And are they going to let Freddie Prinze Jr. save them and be their savior? And like this kind of thing.
You know what else
really
they did? They
have
hired
the confidence.
Yeah. They hired like five famous, well, recognizable character actors from Hollywood that only play bad guys in everything they do. So you get David Warner and the guy from the Perot guy. Who has his voice.
The bad guy and Executive Decision.
Yeah. And then you got the dude from the German dude.
The German dude from GoldenEye. Guy from GoldenEye.
Yeah, not GoldenEye. Was it GoldenEye?
It was GoldenEye. No. Not Sean Bean. But
the other bad guy. You're totally right.
Yeah, my opening was almost going to be, never mind. I'm using it for my...
hang on to that. It's gold.
Let me tell you what mine was going to be. Okay. I tried really hard and I couldn't convince myself that I could pull it off. I was going to impersonate David Warner from the Next Generation episode, Chain of Command.
Ah, the Four Lights one, yeah.
Because every time he spoke in this movie, I just started bristling.
I love
him. I wanted Patrick Stewart to stride onto set and just punch him in the nose.
Yeah, and remind him how many lights there really are.
Patrick, did you just envision Patrick Stewart striding onto the set wearing this like silky red blouse and nothing else?
Well, yeah. Right. And they'd been...
Four lights.
That was toward the end when he really thought he saw five.
Just to be clear, if you're not following me, David Warner played the torturer.
Yeah.
In that, the Cardassian who tortures Picard.
It's also the Klingon Chancellor in the
Undiscovered Country. Come on, guys. Spoilers. We don't want to give away
our only Trek connection.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. He's the one that got shot, though, and it was in low gravity or no gravity, and his blood coagulated into purple floating CGI balls. I never forgot
that's right.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Speaking of balls, they talked about them a lot in this movie.
There's a lot of balls.
And their gender battle.
Can we talk about how much I A, hate the gender battle, and B, cannot stand Lillard's role in this? I hated him
so bad. You can't stand Lillard.
Lillard plays
the exact part that he was born to play. He is just that guy.
He was born to play that guy in SLC Punk and then stop.
He was born the same character from Starship Troopers that Busey's son plays.
Yes. Yeah, Jake Busey. Yeah.
Jake Busey.
Only I'm telling you, he was born to play Shaggy. Freddie Prinze Jr. Was not born to play Fred, but Fred and Shaggy together in this movie actually helped it a lot for me. I think if you've not seen this and you're thinking, I don't want to watch a crappy film psych movie, maybe watch Scooby-Doo first.
Yeah, and that was before this, mind you. So they knew each other from that and then moved on to this. I thought it was the other way around. I got my timeline wrong. And what threw me off was the poster of Sarah Michelle Gellar in his room on the ship. And I went, look at that. Yeah. Already got his lady friend up there.
Right. True story. I'll tell you what, though. Matthew Lillard in 13 Ghost. That was, to me, I loved that. I did like the Scooby-Doo thing, but I really love 13 Ghost.
I want to put something on the record. I think he is cool and interesting as an actor. He's done interesting, different things. SLC right. Punk is great. People should watch that. There's lots of things he's good in. This is terrible and horrible from the top to the bottom, and he is bad in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's really bad. Bad enough that anytime he said anything, I felt like throwing hard objects at my television. And I don't think that's a healthy thing to do.
That's how you were supposed to feel.
Were you, though? Were you? Yeah. I think you're supposed to feel endeared to him. Like, I'll give you an example who did this right. Remember Twister?
Yes, of course, I remember Twister.
Driving the bus around while they were chasing tornadoes, you had Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew who he was then, but he was starting to break out and do some stuff. And he was the perfect that guy. Mm-hmm. Jokey, goofy, permanently stoned, like all those stuff, all the things you want from that guy, you know, the
wearing a funny hat.
Yes.
All
those things. He's that guy. And he does it really, really well. I would even argue that like Pauly Shore is a better that guy.
I don't know.
Matthew Lillard is terrible in this.
Well, he was out of his range. Like, I agree with you. The character is supposed
to
be all.
I can't believe you just said out of his range in this movie. Go ahead.
He was cast in a role that needed more range than he could deliver. For example, this is a character who's funny and he's brash and he marches into the cafeteria, as I already referenced, and tells everybody to listen up and gives a second best talk and then produces a bottle of scotch.
He's a tender lover too.
Right, exactly. He's suddenly in an interracial relationship with somebody who you're supposed to believe he cares about, and he doesn't make you believe it.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
When Brian talked about that, it was Ken guy from that Making a Murderer again.
But you know what I'm saying? Like it's comparing him to, say, I don't know, Jason Mewes. Is awesome because Jason Mewes couldn't have pulled this off either.
There you go. Jason Mewes, another fine example. Anyway, sorry, Dunaway.
No. I just think that I would love to have seen Dax Shepard in that role. I think
there you go.
He might have done a better job.
He would have been better. I mean, it's not that you can't have this guy, and I think space movies, for whatever reason, they benefit from this. When you're trying to have some lightheartedness, you kind of want to have the half-cocked, you know, basically, you know, doing tower runs and stuff like freaking Maverick, you know, like the kind of Top Gun style, whatever. In fact, a lot of this movie was very Top Gunny.
The permission to buzz the tower basically was. Yeah. Right.
I'll be your wing commander anytime.
Be your wing commander, Angel.
Okay. Added that to the list of the movies that kind of influenced this, but didn't make it any better.
Yeah. But part of me was having joy for Chris Roberts during the entire thing, because I know that it's not great. It's kind of amateurish in lots of ways, but I felt like I could feel this guy who felt like a kid with his project, with real actors running around doing stuff around it. It was almost tangible. Now, that's not to say the end result is a good movie. It is not. I want to make that very clear. But his passion for it kind of came through from me, and maybe only at a video game level, especially a late 90s video game level, but nonetheless came through. So I don't know where to point to that or why I felt that way, but maybe I'm biased because I know who he is and what his ambitions, and I respect where he got with it and where he's gotten with it since, but I don't know. Right. I just felt like, hey, this is him doing a thing he loves doing, man. He may be shit, but he's making it.
But we've been focusing on the wrong people. Because David Warner's great and Matthew Lillard's out of his range, but I'm telling you, the movie needs to be carried by Freddie Prinze Jr. and Safran Burrows, and neither of them are good. Like Freddie Prinze Jr., the whole movie, I wanted to just smack his ugly face and tell him to
ugly face. Oh my! I know you didn't just call.
He's he was a handsome kid. He's a little weird looking right now. If you look at him, it looks like a giant walked up and pinched him in the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's something weird about his face now. But Saffron Burroughs is kind of very not great. Everything she does is overdubbed. I don't know if you noticed that, but she didn't.
Oh,
hardly.
Oh, really? Is it because she can't hide her accent or something?
Either
or,
that, or
just, that is her accent.
Yeah, or it could just been crappy sound on the set, or who knows. But she had a bunch of that. And then the other guy, Jürgen Prochnow, who plays the German dude, I don't care what he's in. Eating the scenery up, talking about pilgrims like they're Jews. Did anyone else notice, by the way, the juxtaposition of head of the whole fleet, David Warner, and head of that one ship, the Tiger Claw, which sounds like a thing you'd buy at a gas station because you're hungry on the road. Mm-hmm. you got other British guy played Perot in those BBC things. Amazing British accent, that guy. So then you got British accent. You got German dude, and you got French guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You basically have the World War II conflict with the crazy Americans coming in.
It is.
I totally did.
The whole thing was World War II. I mean,
big time. The Russians are the Kilrathi. That's my theory.
Yeah.
Basically. Standing around going, why is all that? We should have better lighting than all this green lighting. Rah.
If we had better lighting, people would be able to see how shitty we look.
Exactly.
Who thought it was a good idea to put fog everywhere? Get out of here.
What a Klingon-like move that whole thing was. Yeah. But anyway.
It's based on a trope that drives me freaking crazy.
Oh, wait. We haven't played the first one of 2016. Here it is.
Musgrove.
Oops, that's not it. Hold on. All right.
It's called Fantasy Racism. Mm-hmm. Where you come along and say, there's this race that exists. We're never going to show them to you. We're just going to say some things that remind everybody for the rest of the movie that we hate those people.
Yeah.
We're never going to give you a good reason for hating them. It's just, we look down on them and you need to take that for granted.
Not only that, they gave us reasons to like them. Like,
right. Yeah.
They said,
it was so cute and cuddly.
Well, they were like, okay, the pilgrims, first of all, pilgrims are terrible. I mean, it just makes you picture a guy in a big black hat and a dumb collar, you know, like the actual pilgrims that we all stereotypically
were
talking about.
That's funny, because every time I thought it, I was thinking of John Wayne.
Oh, even better.
Get off the deck, pilgrim.
But my point is, like, they painted them as the great first explorers, those who reached out the furthest, found new planets to inhabit and colonization and all this stuff. They're painted like great heroes of history, yet somehow everyone treats them, well, the German guy especially, treats them like Jews in the 1940s.
Because they had all the stuff. They got all the powers, and they're just
Arab people now, or the Japanese in World War II, or, you know, whatever thing you want to throw at it. That seems to be what they were doing with that, and I didn't understand it. Normally, you'd at least have some story about, they blew up a bunch of people, or they ate all our women or whatever.
Like, they ate our women.
Imagine
they nicked our women. It was bad.
Imagine if in Avatar you had never seen the Na'vi. Mm. The Na'vi are just this fantasy race that we just can't stand.
That was the most boring 3D movie ever.
It was just unobtainiumable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing to do, because I get space racism. I like space Nazis. I like when that stuff's handled right. Mm-hmm. But this was just so lightly addressed. It's just like, oh, yeah, they're called pilgrims. Nobody likes them. And he's descended from one. So
I love the fact that Earth in the future, we're always hiding where we're at. No one can find Earth.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like, suck it, aliens. Yeah. I'm not telling you where we live.
Well,
forget it.
And when they do finally find it, there's no way they're going to. Secretly suck them into a black hole or whatever.
I loved how close we're cutting it too. Yeah. And once they're going to get to the solar system, the Sol system. Yeah. We're currently they're going to get here 2 hours ahead of us. What are they going to do in 2 hours? Mm-hmm. Seriously,
that's what I was wondering.
I can't find the closest In-N-Out burger in 2 hours. How the hell are they going to destroy Earth?
Yeah.
It's just so weird.
It's also nice to know the Kilrathi have one ship that matters the most, and that they're so dumb they got sucked into going into a thing without knowing it. They were so focused on that tiny ship, they were like, oh no, and then went right in. And then that was it. Uh-oh, we better not go back to the Sol system and easily destroy everything there, because this would be no problem. But our one ship went away, so back off. Everyone retreat.
We're done. We'll go find somebody else.
It's just, this stuff's just I don't know.
And it's funny because when you brought up the Kilrathi earlier, I had a note that I wanted to bring up pertaining to them. Might as well. The Kilrathi might as well have called them the Hate Fighty.
Yep, Hate Fighty. They were barely in it, too.
Yeah, but do you notice, like, when they come up with alien names, they try and, like, come up with angry-sounding. This is, like, just so on the nose. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's how they were in the game, too, but it's, like, that was dumb then, too. It's kind of like, what's it like? When I was a teenager, we thought it was real funny to call Jolly Ranchers gay farmers. We thought that was a real hoot, you know? Like, gay farmers, and there was some other one that we had a candy that had a name. I don't remember what it was, but we used to, you just switch it around and say, you know.
Of course, yeah.
It's dumb. In fact, it probably explains a lot about how stupid things I say now came from.
Though this entire movie makes the Kilrathi just pure evil, they're evil.
Yeah.
This entire movie, in the end, when they're going through a jump, one ship at a time, and just getting mowed down, and they don't know, the ship's back, don't know that they're flying into an ambush, and that's how we're eliminating the Kilrathi completely. It's like genocide against the Kilrathi. Yeah, I actually feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Took them all out. I don't know why we needed that level of overkill.
It was dumb, they became dumb evil. They have lines like that one I sent you guys in Skype where they say to each other, "He's probably going to warn the fleet of our jump coordinates." It's like just what kind of terrible dialogue is this from the evilest race in the entire universe? It's bad. Just bad. So sorry, Kilrathi. No, a C minus from Brian Ibbett.
Worst villain ever. Yeah. But am I the only one, by the way, who didn't play the video game in the 90s?
Probably. Anyone else?
Yeah, because I didn't have a PC. I was all Mac all the time, unfortunately, so I didn't have access.
It was a big deal in my circle.
Yeah,
that game.
It was for me too. We played the 3DO version, which seemed to be a big deal at the time, like the 3DO. was quite good, and that was the one with Mark Hamill in it, or at least one of them. There may have been multiples, but Mark Hamill and then dude from the Clockwork Orange guy. I always forget his name.
Michael or no.
You know what, though? You know, I think it was actually Wing Commander 3 where suddenly Mark Hamill and
that's
John Rhys-Davies and
all those
Malcolm
actors.
McDowell.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell. That's the guy.
Malcolm McDowell, yeah.
Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, it was 3. And they all showed up in that, and it was a bunch of that. That's when, you know, full motion video and CDs and stuff were starting to take off. And on the PC, I mean, you got full screen FMV of Mark Hamill, whereas, like, you know, Sega CD had this postage stamp sized piece of crap thing for their bad games.
And this was 94, and they mastered it a little bit. I don't want to say remastered, but they mastered it a little bit for PlayStation a couple years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember
that. That was a pretty solid game, Wing Commander 3 on PlayStation.
PlayStation really 1, yeah. They got it later. It was an influential series and still is. I mean, there's a reason Chris Roberts's company and this Star Citizen game have earned, we're over $150 million or some crazy number? It's all crowdfunded and not on Kickstarter? Like, it's just go there and give them money, and you get in early on the alpha and betas, and you get certain ships that no one else would get and stuff like that. And what I've seen of it from E3 footage and things, it's gorgeous. I mean, it looks insane. But they're following his legacy. So this isn't about just some random dude with an idea for a game. This is the legacy of Chris Roberts in the Wing Commander series.
Well, and you also want to give Richard Garriott some credit, because I don't think there would be a series if Origin hadn't picked it up and really put a lot of weight behind it.
Oh, I agree.
I don't think Chris Roberts on his own could have made 7 games.
Probably not, but it's, you know, he is one of those guys. You can put him up on a shelf with Garriott and a few others where you're like, yep, these are our founding fathers, everyone. They are the PC game revolution people. And this guy over here made the first adventure games. And that guy did King's Quest. And this dude did Myst. And this other guy did whatever. And easily Chris Roberts is in that group. But he is on nobody's list of great directors of all time. That's all I want to say.
Yeah. I just keep I wish we could have my friend and coworker Tom Chilton just come on this show and answer one question. Like, would you make a movie? Would you direct a movie if you were offered it? Because I know he would just go, no. Yeah.
I could see kidding? You could see somebody like, I don't know, Metzen, or I'm trying to think of another. Like,
but
I could
directing
see,
a movie?
Yeah, I could see. You knew I could see doing it. I'll tell you who I could see doing it. Metal Gear guy. His freaking name. Kawasaki Mizuki. No. What's his freaking name? Anyway, the guy that made the Metal Gear games.
Yes.
Kojima. Hideo Kojima. Yes, he could do, it would be weird and psycho and we'd all be afraid of it, but he could make a movie. So I'm not so sure. We're probably entering a phase where real game directors slash designers probably are more capable of making the cinematic jump than they would have been in late 90s, which maybe gives more credit to Chris Roberts for pulling it off in whatever way he pulled it off. You know what I mean? Like, what was, why was this one of the first video game based movies? I mean, Mario had come before this, but what else?
Yeah, Mortal Kombat. There's a bunch of
Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat just before that. But still, to take a piece, a relatively obscure PC title and get to make the movie about it, that's a, I don't know. I feel like he either knew all the right people or something good happened. And he's in it. He's the guy who comes and rescues him at the end.
Mm-hmm. I think game developers are always with, and pretty much any content creator would love to see their creation turned into a movie most times. And I think those are probably being pitched in Hollywood all the time. But I think the fact that was about to see episode one come about and, you know, Starship Troopers had some fairly good success. I think the pitch, the time was something that the studios wanted to hear. Mm. And I think he got an opportunity to do that. And I think that's good.
Yeah, why wouldn't you take it, right? You'd want it.
You take it. Absolutely.
See, but I don't know. Like, it's like, would J.K. Rowling have anything to do other than, you know, a writing credit with the Harry Potter movies? Like, I wouldn't believe in her.
As a director. Right. No, I could say, you're totally right.
I don't even know the lady. Maybe I would believe in her.
Maybe. I don't know.
Why are you so poo-pooing on her?
I don't know. As far as we know, she's never done any of that. She's only there as a consultant or as a, you know, creative dude person.
It's just what came creative to mind, dude. Brian. I was trying to think of a good example of someone who made something grand.
It makes sense. That you usually wouldn't give someone who is primarily an author or, you know, a programmer or something, you wouldn't usually hand over directing.
Yeah, you don't.
That's usually not what you would.
You don't give the guy Andy Weir. You don't say, "Dude, The Martian's awesome. Come direct it." You say, "Dude, The Martian's awesome. We will pay you huge money we'll then give it to, you know, the Scott Free Productions, and they'll do it."
Right.
And you know that's how it works normally. That's why I'm saying, I guess I just admire it. Because either it's huge hubris. He may be the world's largest douche. I don't know. He may be just like, Wing Commander's everything, my entire life, all of your lives, everything is affected by Wing Commander. And he may be that guy. I don't know. But one way or the other, I mean, if you're just talking about people reaching out to make their ambitions something more than they could have been, there's credit there.
Right.
To do
by the way, I looked up what Cloud Imperium has gathered. This was just released this week that they've gone over $105 million for Star Citizen.
Oh, I knew there was a five in there somewhere.
105.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Did you guys catch the Mark Hamill thing? Was it in their official? I see on IMDb where Merlin, the nav system, is Mark Hamill, but...
Oh, really?
Did you actually hear it?
No, I didn't hear it.
I didn't.
Wait, when he says, what's going on? There's a... The talking computer.
It's in the IMDb credits, but it's kind of like with a question mark next to it. So I don't know what that means.
We
don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Read my bio in IMDb and then tell me it's true. Good Lord. I don't know. That's cool, though, if you did. Because Malcolm McDowell was supposed to reprise his role as Admiral Towlin.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
Anyway, because that's the guy's name in the video game series. Ended up going to David Warner. But do you guys think that we never got back to this point, but do you think they hired all of these sometimes often bad guys to play these character roles was so that we always wondered if there was a traitor or somebody.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because they never did. Possibly. Like, it was just a big MacGuffin. All three of them turned out to be, I mean, they all had strong opinions or, you know, whatever, but none of them were evil. They all wanted the Kilrathi dead. But I kept expecting them to go, and they found out about our plans because the German guy gave it to him. You know?
I like that idea, but I did... You know, I've been influenced by Star Wars, the Force Awakens recently, because so many people were playing different bit roles as bad guys and stuff. And I was kind of almost looking at the Kilrathi going, who is that? Do I know who that is in that Kilrathi suit? Nope, it's nobody. There's nobody in those Kilrathi suits.
Yeah, I don't know.
I looked it up.
It's kind of interesting.
Graham Rydell, who was somebody, but that was the only person that had a picture in IMDb that was... Anybody? I don't know.
Nobody we'd seen in anything else.
Well, right, for our two music guys here, Randy and Ibbett, did either of you come away thinking that the music far outclassed the film? Because I thought the music was pretty good. It was cheesy in parts, but it was pretty strong for you know, a crap movie to have that good of a, what I thought was that good of an orchestrated soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, my basis for it is if it's distracting, like if I notice the music, whether it's either good or bad, then, you know, obviously that speaks for itself. But if I don't notice the music, then that usually lands on the side of good because it wasn't distracting from the film and it added to it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Randy? You're usually...
So it was David Arnold was the person who did the music for the video games at some point. And so he gets credited because all of the scoring follows those themes. Mm-hmm. But the guy who actually did all the composing is named Kevin Kiner. And he's got a really strange history in Hollywood of doing video game scoring, of doing TV show scoring like CSI Miami. Mm. And for whatever reason, Kevin Kiner's the guy who scored all of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And the TV show or the movie? Like
TV
the
show.
TV show. The good Clone Wars. Yeah.
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 And I kind of like the music in Clone Wars. I think when it wanders away from Star Wars and makes new ground, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So
that whole thing's good. That is the only redeeming, in my opinion, the most redeeming thing about any prequel, anything, is that series is great. It's real good. Yeah. I wish the movies were more adherent to that style and story than
so. So when I looked again, like I watched the credits for my first viewing, and I'm like, David Arnold, Kevin Kiner, interesting. And I looked him up, and okay, all right. So when my second viewing, I was paying attention to the music, and the music in this movie is pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's there's times when I feel like it's for a different movie or for a different emotion than we're currently seeing on the screen.
Yeah, I had that too.
But what we're seeing on the screen is so bad that I just kind of close my eyes a little bit and think about the music and enjoy that.
Yeah, it's pretty nerdy. It's nice music considering I just think it could have been real bad and I was surprised by that. So I felt good about it. How do you guys feel about everybody being space British? Now, I have a theory about this. Yeah. Space British.
Give yourself a trope alert, my friend.
Well, it is a good trope in here, but I also think I have a explanation for it. It's because for whatever reason, and this movie's also included in that, Star Wars also, these movies are filmed often in London or in, you know.
Like Elstree Studios or wherever, where the extras are all British.
Yeah, which is a little weird in that I don't know why that's always seems to be the science fiction way of doing things, but outside of Star Trek, it feels like most science fiction movies of any note always have a British cast or supporting cast and then one or two Americans.
I would think it'd probably be because of location.
Probably.
I mean, because those wide open spaces and maybe I'm wrong.
Well, they have big where, I mean, most of the stuff's filled on a set, but
yeah,
but like those studios that Brian mentioned are world famous for good for this.
It's mm-hmm.
good for this sort of thing. So maybe that's all it is, but man, I love a good spray. I love space British. I love space British. Nazis. I love space. That stuff is great. The idea that we've applied that to like the way we do with, you know, any kind of fantasy story, everyone better have a British or Scottish accent or forget it, right? It's kind of like that in space these days. If you don't, you know, have all these British guys.
It actually bothers me.
Does it really?
Actually, yeah, I was thinking about this during the movie because I was like, you know what? That just reminds me that there is so many different languages just on our planet alone that there's no way we're going to be able to communicate with anybody in space. I mean,
let alone share the same accent.
Right. It's going to be insane. How do you even keep an accent when you're living in space with a bunch of people?
But it's the same. Oh, you know what you guys all should be doing, like me? Because, listen, I'm now going to set your taste for the next 6 months or whatever. You all should be watching Expanse, The Expanse on Sci-Fi. Mm-hmm. If you're not watching it, I highly recommend you do. If you liked BSG or at least the production value of BSG, because I don't think story-wise it's that similar, but it's really, really cool. And speaking of Punisher, it's got Thomas Jane in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It will remind you that sci-fi, when they decide to put their money and talent to work, they can make really good TV. And I'm absolutely in love with it. And one of the things that I like about it, it's based on the series of books that is also quite popular and that Tom raves about constantly. It's
gay.
It's all set primarily between Mars, Earth, and a big cold war between the two. Mars has long been colonized by humans, and so now they're a superpower of their own. And also, there are a bunch of people called Belters who live in the asteroid belts of various planets and stars, or not stars, planets and moons that are around around our solar system. Anyway, right. They're called belters, and they're kind of like the outcasts of society, and they have their own accent there that I cannot put my freaking finger on.
My fecal finger on it.
Right. My pollinating finger.
I got to clean my fecal finger. But no, it is really cool. And when they talk, you buy it. You buy this thing that, oh, a whole new kind of vernacular has grown out of this place where there are now multiple generations who have grown up on this floating rock.
That makes sense.
It's super cool. That show is really good at some of those things done away. Some of those, like, is sci-fi always doing this sort of stuff? It's good.
I know they've got, I'm looking at a sci-fi website, and they actually had the first 5 episodes for free. Is it something they're going to be continuing?
They do it every week. Yeah. It's, I bought the season because I don't want commercials, but it's absolutely worth your time no matter how you see it. It's really, really good. And if more people see it, hopefully the longer this show will last, because it has legs. It is super, super cool. It's everything I would like from a smart science fiction story. It's really, really good.
While we're talking about TV, I have two things. One, everybody go watch Telenovela.
Oh, and yes. Two, really? Yes, I've been enjoying the crap out of that.
You're
going to
recommend
fun.
Something produced by Eva Longoria.
Yes, I am. My old friend Eva, we have a history together, she and I. Two... No, but I'm serious, Brian. It's not got a laugh track. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of single camera stuff where people are coming and going from the frame, and
that's pretty good.
And it's very funny.
Really?
It never stops being funny.
Also enjoying the Superstore Cloud 9 show too.
I've seen previews for that too, and it just looks like, all right, this is filler. While they don't have
it is filler.
The regular regular comedies.
But Telenovela, I'm going to read with Randy. It's pretty good.
You may not realize it's a farce, but you need to watch it because it's a farce.
Well, it sounds like a farce. I mean,
I thought it was going to be like
Black. I thought it was a farce.
I thought it was going to be like dark comedy or maybe even like dramedy. It's not.
Really?
It's straight up sitcom.
Okay. Yeah. Like, but when you say no laugh track, single camera, we're talking like, you know, Arrested Development style, or you know, whatever.
Yes.
Those kind of shows. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll check it out. If you watch The Expanse, which is much more appropriate to today's discussion, then I will watch Telenovela.
I just wanted to. I had two things. I just wanted to get that out there because you said people should watch The Expanse, and I immediately thought, what am I telling people to watch? Like this is Telenovela. The second thing.
Yeah.
So over the winter holiday, everybody that you've ever known watched a Netflix documentary, true crime.
I'm
documentary.
Not done yet.
I know. I know. And I'm not going to say, I realize there are people who have just started and whatever, but this Making a Murderer was a thing. Mm-hmm. And we got a lot of really good reaction from our immediately sacking The Force Awakens right after The Force Awakens premiered. Right. And so I don't know that it would have made a great film sack, Making a Murderer. Like, it's really depressing.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of people having these arguments and debates. Just this discussion about this show, because everybody watched it and it leaves you with a lot of questions. Yeah. And some people think they have answers and they have different answers.
It's water cooler central, that show, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So podcasting's back, everyone.
Yeah.
It's going to be the subject of the next serial. Watch.
I just wanted to put it out there. The next time that happens, the next time there's this flash in the pan cultural phenomenon, and it really was, no one. Like 10 days after this thing was put on Netflix, no one had seen it. Then suddenly everyone had seen it.
Yeah, it was.
Everyone had an opinion on it too. It was like immediately tweeted about it constantly. Like.
Oh yeah, it really is a true phenomenon. I can't even really think of anything close to it outside of that serial thing that was that big of a, I guess Jinx on HBO was that same sort of thing.
True Detective season 1 was like this.
Yeah, there's definitely examples.
Only True Detective season 1 took 10 weeks. To come out, and this, you know, came out all at once.
Well, we all did the obvious one, which was Star Wars, right?
Right.
But we got a lot of really good feedback about that. People really liked it. We did that and want more. So, yes.
Yeah, so I'm just saying the next time a Making a Murderer, and hopefully something not so dreary, comes along.
Prosecuting DA attorney Ken Kratch has something to say. So I'm going to go ahead and let him speak. Here you go.
You can't spell badass. Without D-A.
All right. Brian, do you want to do you?
Nope, that's so much fun.
I that's an old one. I got that in a voice message. But Brian does the most dead-on, perfect impression of that guy, and it is freaky great. So you don't have to do one now. I know it's a little on the spot, but
do it on your Twitter post.
Yeah. Listen,
if there's some evidence that we need to bring to the forefront, I'll have you take a look at Exhibit B.
It's impossible for you to stand up, too. You have to sit the whole time.
Right.
Killing me.
Yes. Oh,
so
my
you haven't
gosh.
Watched it. If you have not watched that yet, get to watch it.
Yeah, it's really good. Worth seeing.
How far are you through it, by the way, Brian?
Me, I'm about episode five. Okay. Yeah. We were running a little bit late today, and I did not miss a beat. I went right back in and started watching more of it while I waited.
There's some stuff they left out, which you should probably check out when you're done. That will help form whatever opinion you're going to have as you come away from it. But
trying not to read anything because I could easily cheat this and go to the internet and see what the hell really happened. But no, I'm enjoying the suspense.
I don't think that it's really about the suspense. I think it's about the soul crushing outcomes for so many people. I don't care what there is to read on the internet. There's nothing that can change that a 16-year-old slow kid got railroaded. I'm talking about first or second episode. Got railroaded into a confession that makes no sense. He's mistreated so badly. And like that, there's nothing that'll take that away. There's nothing you could put on Vox.com that's going to change me staying awake at night going, oh, that sucks so much.
There's a lot of me yelling at the TV. Son of a, what are they doing? They can't do that.
Oh, yeah, no, the thing is full of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And even after some of these other things came to light, it's still infuriating, everything about it. Small town Wisconsin weirdness, man. They need to, it's like Twin Peaks there for real is what's going on. This is like real life Twin Peaks. Yeah. That's what it reminds me of.
I just like the accents.
Yeah.
With a little Fargo accent.
Yeah.
And you have to finish.
Okay, then.
Statement.
Okay, then. Bye.
You have to finish every statement with the phrase and everything else.
Yeah.
So weird. That's a strange verbal tick and everything else.
I don't know. I do have a question about this trope back here in the Wing Commander.
Yes. Yes.
Why do they even have those face masks? I don't understand it. If you're just going to tear them off to say something dramatic, just leave them off
under your chin. Yeah.
Just leave them off. You're all talking still.
We need extra oxygen just right now.
Yeah.
That's classic. I mean, you used to do that. And that was the thing that they were trying to come across. They were like, hey, look, these are like World War One pilots who had to wear masks and, you know, whatever. Anyway, yeah, there was a lot of that. It couldn't figure out. This movie could not figure out what it wanted to be to me.
It's nice to know that's nice to know this far flung in the future. We'll still be having very, very basic arguments about whether women or men do things better than each other.
It was like we reset or something. It was weird.
Or just didn't think out far enough to make your movie less tropey and more, I don't know, future-y.
It seems so, the date, this seems so arbitrary. I mean, what was it, like 26, 35? I don't know. It was some kind of weird.
A date we'll never get to because humanity will kill itself by then. That's what you hope, right? Because you don't ever want to make your movie where you're right. Like the who was the replicant?
Blade Runner?
Rutger Hauer was made yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you look at the history on the card from Blade Runner, so he was born this yesterday in 2016. Well, I hate to tell everybody, we ain't got no replicants yet. So
as far as you know,
well, fantasy racism.
I just make guys.
You just came up with another example of fantasy racism.
Oh, that's right. Replicants are treated like crap. You're right.
Yeah, skin jobs.
Skin jobs. I love that.
Skin jobs. Yeah. Right.
They also called them that in
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, BSG. They called the skin version. It's a Cylon skin jobs. Mm. Yep. I suppose maybe as
posters
a tribute.
And skins.
You know, anyway.
I really wanted the cross to do more in this movie. I really wanted him to like stab a Kilrathi with that little sword.
What were you hoping that I thought that it was going to glow suddenly and then it would bring down some space fifth element business.
Right, the Pilgrim's Cross. Yeah.
I was really waiting on something that Pilgrim's Cross. Either that is going to, you know, make a daiquiri or something.
I expected it. I both expected it and dreaded it because I don't like that when a mystery object saves the world. I hate that.
No, and there's way more blade, by the way, in that thing than it can really hold.
Yeah. And notice when he would put it back into its little sheath, it always happened slightly off camera.
Off screen. You'd hear the noise. Yep. Sure. Yeah.
I love that. Like when a lightsaber gets sucked in out of camera, you're like, oh, yeah, you didn't want to animate that, did you? I see what you're doing. Can you guys explain this to me? And I'm not versed in this enough, you know, military jargon to really understand it, but they called him lieutenant a lot and they called him lieutenant a lot. What's the difference?
Lieutenant? I didn't hear that.
Space British.
Space British called him lieutenant, but also David Warner called him lieutenant. So I'm trying to figure out, is that just bad movie making or is there a...
Yes, that's just bad movie making.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, there is a rank movie lieutenant. Made. I never knew what the difference was, though.
There is a difference.
It's the same
word. I think
we're
going to get an email.
No, that's the same word. Those
same
are
meaning.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. It's not really the same word or else it'd be spelled the same. But yes, I see what you mean. It's like a different... It's a different word for the same guy.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's my understanding. But when I heard him, two British guys use it and then two other British guys use the other way, I just thought, well, wait, are you just screwing up or did he get promoted? Is lieutenant, when did he become right tenant? Like, what's going on?
Does he work in pairs with another guy named right tenant?
And was he Doctor Who for a while?
Neil Tennant during all this?
Is he Purple Man? I don't know what's happening.
Or anyway, David Tennant for that matter?
Right. Hey, did you guys, what was... You know, I pride myself usually in the sci-fi movies when they bring a piece of technology. Could you guys tell what kind of real-life technology it was he had in that, almost like a zip disc, but it was clear or something?
That looked like
mini disc.
Yeah,
it was like it mini a mini disc?
Oh, it was totally mini disc, yeah.
Yeah. Remember, that was all the rage for a while.
Yeah, I boxed that crap.
And they didn't even really dress it up.
No, not really.
I was thinking about how you could have glued glitter to that whole thing, and it would have actually
looked... They just put a sticker over the center hole, like the center spindle thing. That's all they did.
All I could think of was, man, Ibbot, you have... Every time there was like a music technology that purported to be the hot new thing, Brian Ibbot has boxes of it. Somewhere.
Well, dude, at the time, that was before burnable CDs, right? So it was like, all right, you could do mixtapes or you could have instant access to the song, like go right to the song you want with mini disc. And I did some DJing weddings for a while with that stuff. It was like, oh, this is great. And then CDs came. I was like, wow, these are so much cheaper.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's so awesome. Cheaper. But I saw it and went, oh, come on, guys. Don't use a modern day thing. Use a thing that's like, you know, fake looking. Like you would never have a little...
What would you prefer? Like a laser disc or something?
No, like a little stick. Just like a little, like
but
star-
that was so
USB drive?
You say... No,
you say that, but I actually, that was like one of the things that bothers me the most in The Force Awakens. I hate to keep going back to there, but I saw it again for the third time yesterday. And when he keeps giving BB-8 that little piece of technology that doesn't fit anywhere, that bugs me. It's like, that doesn't go anywhere.
It doesn't bother me at all. I like that. I like it because it's obscure and it doesn't have any reference to our current day other than we know there's something on it. Like, I'm not saying it needs to look like a USB stick. In 99, nobody knew what that was. But in 99, you could have gotten away with saying, like Star Trek did this. They had those little
crystals
things where they pull out a black handle, but then there was like a glowy yellow shard on it. Do something like that.
Right. It could have been a cubic crystal or something. And just the reference to it would have told us what it was.
Yeah. Not a Sony mini disc.
And then stay on it with the camera.
Look at Dunaway doesn't. Well, I guess maybe at the time Dunaway, you might have said, "Oh yeah, it looks like a Sony. Looks like one of those silly Sony things."
Yeah,
right.
Could have been. I mean, maybe at the time that looks. I mean, I remember zip
was this
discs.
Sponsored by Sony.
You remember in Face Off they use zip discs.
yes,
that bothered me too. I don't like it.
I got a stack of those.
Look how many kids today see use software that has a picture of a disc for the save icon that have no idea what that is.
Yeah. They've never used it. Well, they know it's their save icon, but they don't know why.
Right, right.
I will guarantee you if I could access any of these zip discs, you would find the history of Napster.
Hardcore porn.
Napster.
Oh.
Or as my friend used to call it, nature.
Nature. Is nature discs?
Yeah. Nature, because this is nature.
That's funny, dude. I love that. Someone's porn stash called his nature stash.
Yeah, it's nature.
That's fantastic. Okay. Do you guys want to hear some clips? I got clips.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Please.
All right, I'm going to play them now. These are various and complete. Here's one, David Warner saying words.
The Pegasus Navcom. My God, if they have it.
What's the fleet's position?
We're spread out all over the sector. The earliest our advance elements can reach Sol is 42 hours, and that's taking risks with the jump, sir.
Give me the Vega and Sol sectors.
All right, so David Warner. Just
God, there are four lights.
I know, right?
The Saul sector, almost at least it's salsa.
I know, or the Saul, like S-A-A-U-L or A.
Saul, give me the Saul sector.
Give me the Saul sector.
Oh boy, should I bring all my shoes and glasses?
Bring your pickles. I don't know why I said pickles. All right, here's the next one. This guy. Here's my line on this. I wrote, this guy is French as shit. So here's that.
I'm reading that as a 100,000 kilometer no fly zone, sir.
Just put in beacon 147. It's a shortcut.
Wee poo poo.
A shortcut.
Yes.
I did like the music. I didn't notice the music. You're right. Great. In that scene, it's pretty good.
Music's great throughout, I think. Yeah. I think it's pretty solid, pretty good. I wrote, is this true? Okay, so
okay.
It asks the question.
That beacon is marking a gravity well. 1 cubic inch of it exerts more gravitational force than the sun.
Can a 1 cubic inch of a gravity well in space exert more gravitational pull than the sun?
Yes.
Really? They didn't just make that up.
You don't want to think about it for a minute?
Well, this has been one of those things that keeps cropping up in sci-fi, the density of black holes. Like, it's unmeasurably high. And it's awesome.
But he measured it. He measured it by saying 1 inch is like the sun.
No, he said more. He just said more than.
Oh, all right. Fine. I guess so.
He just said alligator mouth this way. That's what he said.
Yeah. And this is the second thing I've seen recently, and I can't remember the first thing, where somebody figured out how to fly to the back end of a black hole and poop out on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Interstellar.
No.
Okay.
Did the black hole. Or most recent.
It's not The Expanse, which I've been watching, but it's something else. Ah, I can't think of what it was, but they did the exact same freaking thing.
Interstellar does so much hand-waving about black holes and space travel. It's just, we found a wormhole. Don't worry about it.
That movie's good. That movie's long. Yeah. I'll just say that about it. What's this? Lillard. Oh, Lillard doing what he does.
I don't like this guy. Me? I don't know about you, but I really don't like this guy at all, man.
Yeah, man. My name's, what's his name? Excelsior, no. What's his name? It's like something stupid.
Maniac.
Like Danger. Oh, Maniac. That's
Maniac,
it.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Yeah.
Maniac.
Hey, how much do you want to bet Matthew Lillard either lives in Colorado or Washington right now? Or at least spends a large amount of time.
I bet he's still working, isn't he? He's doing stuff. What's he doing now? Hold on.
Wait, where are they now? I got this.
I'm just trying to look. And if he does live in one of those states, then he is getting the pot he needs and everything's fine.
this is one of my favorite things. I always do this where are they now kind of thing.
By the way, he looks great. He looks great for his
age.
He
does look great, yeah.
He's older than
The
me.
Good Wife he's currently on.
Yeah.
And something Epic's called Prime. Be Cool, Scooby-Doo.
Okay.
No.
He's Shaggy Rogers.
Voice actor for Be Cool, Scooby-Doo.
He's Shaggy Rogers.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, Be Cool, Scooby-Doo. It's actually pretty decent.
Y'all I didn't know that? Shaggy's last name was Rogers until just now.
His first name is Norval.
What?
Yeah. Well, you thought his first name was really what? Shaggy?
I thought it was
you
just Shaggy.
His parents named him Shaggy?
Yeah. I really didn't know he had a full name. That's shocking to me. I expected none of this.
Shaggy Rogers.
All right.
I've actually been enjoying Be Cool Scooby-Doo, by the way, on Cartoon Network, if you guys haven't seen it.
It's all right.
Man, ever since he did that movie, he is the guy you go to for the voice.
Yeah.
He found his
I mean, obviously, job. You know, Casey Kasem's not around anymore to do that, but.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Get his head in a jar someplace.
Brian Ebbett.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Matthew Lillard lives in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And a week ago, I ran all over Los Angeles, all over downtown Los Angeles and up into Elysian Park. Uh-huh. I'll have you know that town is just covered in pot smoke.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess it's not that hard to get a medical.
It's really,
Or even an really illegal, amount.
Well, yes.
You get whatever you need.
10 p.m. on a Sunday night, I'm running around on foot, and I just can't. Every 5 minutes, I go through another cloud of pot smoke.
Well, I have another message from Ken Kratch, just real quick. I just want to play this one here. Okay. Here you go.
You can't spell badass without D-A.
That's my favorite thing of the year. All right.
You know what?
I'm not going to tell you the joke that I almost used.
No.
Okay.
No, that was a private thing between that I will never divulge. All right. Here is a thing where I agree with the pilot.
I mean, that's not bad, but the second best pilot at the Academy.
You shut up!
Yeah, I agree with you. Shut up.
Get back together.
Because you're terrible. Also, this guy.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. You know what I do see? Blonde.
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 Yeah. Porky's in space.
It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, even I felt uncomfortable about that.
Here's a...
even me.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it?
Here's a... Oh, this file's weird. It says, audio captured after Brian Ibbett finished his prom night in 1987.
Okay, so we're in the aftermath.
This is afterwards, and I don't think it's him speaking, but it's someone talking about what happened to him on prom night. Good. So here you go.
You're just taking a missile up your tailpipe.
Oh, gosh. All right. Oh, yes. I don't know if that means something else or if that's just literal or what happened. You'll have to tell us later.
I took a much older British lady to prom. I finally, it's finally out there.
She's pretty.
I tell you, man, Saffron Burrow's just she didn't seem badass. Like, I know we just use that term, but she never came across in this film as the badass wing commander. Like, you see the title of the film and you spend the first 10 minutes thinking there's a wing commander coming.
She's good in Troy. She's great in Troy if you've seen Troy.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And she was good in the first season of or second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too.
Oh, I didn't know she was in that.
Yeah, she plays Abigail, not Abigail. What's Hand? Director Hand, I can't remember first name.
Right.
Formerly played by Ray Walston.
Yes. Yes. Basically that guy.
In this movie, really, they should have just swapped her with Ginny Holder because she's badass.
Yeah.
Ginny Holder.
She's Eric Holder's. No, I don't know who that is.
I don't know who Ginny
is. Rosie. They push her off the.
Okay. Gotcha.
Oh, Rosie.
She's
Rosie.
The debris on the deck.
Yeah. She's the debris on deck. Clean up that debris.
She's badass, and I think she would have been a better casting there.
I kind of agree.
Saffron Burrows.
They could have switched those two. It would have been fine.
Oh, that would have been
swap
great.
Them out. Say the name. I like when movies say the name of the movie. So here you go.
Lieutenant Commander Devereaux, your wing commander.
Well, say the movie name. Woo! Love it when movies do that. Okay, here's some... Yeah. Testicle references.
You got balls.
You should see them.
Mine are bigger.
I've been told size doesn't matter.
She lied.
It would have been much funnier if she would have said he lied.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? You should have written this movie. That
you notice, by the way, I don't know if you captured any of it, but every time Saffron Burrows talked, it always began with, "All right, ladies."
Oh, she did do that a lot.
That bothered me. That bothered me.
That joke was old after the first time it was told.
She might say it. And, she may say it in one of these. I'm not sure.
And we heard it in the movie we're seeing next week, too.
Yeah, but, that's true.
Well, and also, there's, I mean, like I say, the comparisons to Starship Troopers are all over this movie. And I don't understand why they didn't try not to have that sort of gender attitude. I don't know. It just wasn't funny.
Yeah, it didn't work. Here's I love these two guys is what I wrote. So here they are.
I don't like it. What don't you like, Paul? The disc came to us on the Diligent, entrusted to a pilgrim half-breed. I sent for this, Daggett.
I freaking love the way those guys talked back and forth. Mm-hmm. They were great. Especially that Perot guy. He's got a voice on him, man.
First, I thought he was Michael Ironsides until he spoke.
Until he said words.
Until he said words like, oh, that's not Michael Ironsides.
No, he's the guy with the mustache on that British show I never watched because when I was a kid, I thought it was boring. But yes, that's that guy. Here's his. Here's the ladies' comment.
You ladies don't stand down. You'll have a problem with me.
All right, great.
Wow, why did you swallow the middle of that sentence?
I don't know, hear it again.
You ladies don't stand down, you'll have a problem with me.
why not get another take, Mr. Director?
Go get him, Mega Man. It's like that Mega Man guy.
Yeah, play that guy.
Okay, I'm going to find that guy.
I love that guy.
This guy is the best. Here we go.
You must recover all the energy immediately, Mega Man.
Got this.
What name was he about to say? I almost gave away your real name.
Yeah, Mr.
Mega Man.
Mega Man. Okay, one take's fine. Tell your grandpa thanks. It's terrible. Mega Man 3. Enjoy it. Here's the, what's this? Oh, I could listen to this guy all day, I wrote.
This tactical schematic outlines a nightmare, Mr. Taggart. It tells me that the Kilrathi may have a navcom, and with it the capacity to jump into Earth space. And based on that nightmare, it orders me to take radical action, which, if it and you are a lie, could compromise this ship and its crew.
Man, See, serious. Talk me to bed. Space. I would sleep with him talking next to me. Love his voice.
Oh, I'm so glad for the last three words of that sentence.
I was too. I was getting a little concerned. It was.
Yeah, I shouldn't have paused there.
Yeah, I would sleep with him. Talking.
Here's another part where he says cool things.
Plot a course for the Cryptis Quasar. Full speed, if you please.
Oh, man.
Oh, I don't mind if I do. Thanks, Captain, for asking in such a nice way.
Yeah.
Please.
I like him a lot. All right, here's why women are better shots.
Don't take it personally, Nugget. It's a question of estrogen.
Why does she call him Nugget?
I don't know. Because she was tired of saying ladies?
Yeah. That's a term for...
Well, that was the black lady, though.
Rookie pilots.
Oh,
nice. Different lady. Here's a great shit. I wrote.
All those wing commanders sound alike to me.
I know. They're all very wing commandy. Here's one about, I just like a good swear word in a movie, so here it is.
Shit!
There you go. I like that one.
Well, brace yourself for next week.
Annoying Lillard.
Todd, Maniac Marshall, at your service, ma'am.
Yeah, gosh!
I love it. God, wow. He's so annoying. It's perfect.
So annoying. Yeah.
He actually, you just made him sound like Peter Griffin.
Yeah.
Now we have to hear the clip again and imagine Peter Griffin laughing
at
the
end.
There
you go. Whoops.
Todd, Maniac Marshall, at your service, ma'am.
Oh my gosh.
So awesome.
All right, here's more bad Lillard.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just him yelling. Bad sound effects. I don't know why they use these. Were these in the game? Because that's what they reminded me of, and maybe that's why they were in it. But this right here.
Beep.
Yes.
That was their little.
There's a
pew
pew above a sound.
Yeah.
That's from the game.
That sounded very familiar that way, and also not good. here's a dirty line.
Just easy thing, girl.
I love it when you talk dirty.
Last words you say to the guy before you die.
True story.
Oh, yeah, before die.
Yep. Right before you die, the last thing you do is a cheap crap joke like that. And there you go. That's it. That's all you're going
to
remember.
Again, but it was intended to not only be a good joke, but to remind you that they're, you know, intimate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it just, I never felt that thing that you're supposed to feel when she dies. And I think it's because
Sympathy? She
doesn't die. You just see a wreck.
Sadness.
And the wreck is supposed to be representative of her, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And you never get that payoff of her final words or her final glance at him or whatever.
Yeah. I also like that. Here aboard the Lion Claw, you can only get it on if you both got bleached blonde hair.
That's how we pair you up.
Yeah.
Randy, this goes back to what this movie didn't know what it wanted to be. And I think that scene was more of a homage to, you know, how they used to, if you would land on a carrier in a movie from about World War II and you didn't quite get it right, they were just like, screw you, we got to scrape you off so we can get other people in here. And
right. And so instead of, I just said her name and I've lost it. Instead of Jenny Holder
Rosie?
getting her final thing, they gave it to Saffron Burroughs, right?
Yeah.
Get that
right,
on my deck.
Right.
And the whole time I'm just thinking, wait a minute, why do we have to land in a ship anyway? Why do spaceships have to land inside other ships?
Shut up.
And so forth. And, you know, like,
where are the magic?
I'm sorry.
If it were me, okay, this is what I would do. Because there's all these other problems, like, well, how are we all flying right side up when we meet each other in space and things like that?
6 o'clock. We're in a three-dimensional space. You can't do that.
Yeah, there is no 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. But if you accept all of that, I guess it's acceptable to think, well, they need to be on board so then Chief Tyrell can, you know, work on your ship because it's got a big hole in it now. But also, if it was ever me, I would have all my fighters attached to the outside of my ship like barnacles on a whale.
And then what? Mm-hmm. You just climb down through the bottom, or what?
Yeah, there'd be like a little shaft, and you just whoop, go up the shaft. You'd insert it gently.
Just easy thing, girl.
All right, it's like that.
So you have to make a shaft for every single fighter you're going to have?
Well,
I'd say just make a dang deck that people can land on.
That's a good point. No, Brian's right. Brian's right.
But this is 2630. Five something.
Because you can't have them just flying. They can't just be flying next to you at some relative distance constantly. And that's where they park, basically, even though the resistance isn't a problem or any of that. Because then how would you get off ship and then onto the main ship, right?
Because of shields and.
Brian's right. You got to land on the damn ship.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like it.
Well, how do you do it, though?
What took me to that problem was how badly her death was portrayed, because it wasn't portrayed. Yeah. Like, and then I'm like, wait a minute, why do we have this wreck in the middle of the ship anyway? Like, right. Surely there's a better solution. This is this aircraft carrier solution works for the ocean. You know, like,
well, yeah. And why does there have to be such a long runway when you're dealing with spaceships in space?
Yeah, right? Have come in space, and just land.
Right. You could think they could stop more in a more.
Well, yeah. Right. Well, then even taking off, you don't need a runway, right? No, you drive off the runway and you're in space where you were heading anyway.
Well, BSG is guilty of this also, of taking off and landing in a way that they don't need to.
Sure.
So, but it does need to, because it actually looks cool, because like you're being shot out of a gun.
It's cool. Don't get me wrong. It looks cool. And when Starbuck would land and have bad landing gear and come in all hot and everything, that's cool. Right. It's just, Brian's right. You should be able to just kind of hover in there and be done.
Mm-hmm. Right, and just to get the ocean thing done, the aircraft carrier floats on top of the ocean. Space is an ocean, so you're right. In the middle of it like a submarine, and no one's ever made a submarine that has little tinier submarines exactly. That leave and come back into it.
Well, no, but I mean, when you know, your pilots have to get out and go pee, and they're not going to do that on the outside of the hull of the ship.
That's true. Space. Maybe they got a little stadium pal in there, you know?
Trucker's buddy.
Trucker's buddy.
This is the problem. A movie, you're not supposed to think about these. You're not supposed to be given an opportunity to think.
And let me just make the point again. I wouldn't have been thinking about that if they had portrayed this.
Distracted you enough. Some,
yeah. All right. Yeah, well, Matthew Lillard needs a medic.
What are you doing? I'm not around, huh?
Medic!
Oh, sorry. That was what's the
name.
Medic! My voice is changing. Finally, Chris Roberts cameo.
Welcome to Sol Sector, Lieutenant.
Okay. That's all you get, buddy.
Well,
you directed your movie, and then you got to come in and give a very bad line, and off you go. That's it. I thought I had another Ibbit one. Oh, that's next week. I can't wait for that.
Oh, jeez.
It's a good one. It's a good one. All right. That takes us to the next phase of things, which is this. The film sack checklist. I have it right here. Do it for Rosie. Check. Plastic red Master Chief costumes. Check. Mm-hmm. Probably good that Chris Roberts went back to directing video games. Check. Star Trek Connection is only one. David Warner. He played Admiral Jeffrey Talon. He was in Star Trek V, Star Trek VI, TNG. The one that Randy kept bringing up is the one from TNG. He played the Kardashian Ghoul Madred in the episode Chain of Command Part 1 and Chain of Command Part 2. There are four lights. Soundtrack grade, I give it good, but OTT for over the top. A little over the top. That's okay. I like that in my movies. It's fine.
Sure.
Let's get to a Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less, or at least for now, until Twitter makes a 10,000 character limit.
Not going to happen. Yeah. Mark my words.
I don't think so. My prediction is there's no way in hell that happens. Yeah. Let's start with Randy.
Wing Commander. Just like Star Wars, if Luke Skywalker and Han Solo had been played by Sean Penn and John Belushi, admit it, you'd watch that.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, I'd watch that. You kidding me? Yeah, in a heartbeat. Brian Dunaway.
Wing Commander, this movie never existed. Don't you do that to me, Scott. Don't you
do that. All right. And finally, Brian Ibbett.
Wing Commander, a bunch of bad guys from your favorite 80s and 90s action movies band together to fight bad guys from... this movie.
Oh.
Cat Planet of Cats.
That's perfect. Well done. I also have this in my hand. Alternate titles for today's film. Let's Hardly Ever Show the Bad Guys, or The Entire Army is 22 and Hot. all right. I have a phone call
to
play.
Is this a CW sci-fi?
It felt like it in a lot of ways.
It did feel like it. That's a good point.
It really did to me, too. Except the one guy that was kind of a jerk in the mess hall and then wouldn't save him when he was getting sucked out of the flight deck.
A fight in the mess hall.
He's a douche and is a douche in everything he's in, but man, he looks old now. It's real weird how that guy aged since 99. I guess we all did a little in the last, what is that? How long has that been? 99 been 18 years, 17 years? No.
Gee, Scott, let's see. 99, that'll be 2000, and then just add the 16. Math.
Math is hard.
Good day.
That's my brain right now. Let's play a phone call. We got one here that came to us at this voicemail number. I was trying to say phone and voicemail together. 801-471-0462 is where it got left, and it's all about Ritalin because we brought it up on the show. So here's the call.
I just finished listening to your most recent episode with Heathers and the wonderful voicemail you had at the end in regards to Ritalin. I can support your assertion that it is a stimulant. However, in the body chemistry of a person with ADHD, stimulants actually act as a calming agent. So in a way, it is sort of a depressant, but not really. It just stimulates their brain in such a way that they are able to calm down and think clearly and organize their thoughts. Love the show, though. Thanks.
I love medical responses to things that we know nothing about. And I would say this. I knew a kid who was formally diagnosed with ADHD, and we just all over the place, couldn't keep attention on anything for any more than a second. And if you gave him candy, he would calm down and focus.
Or caffeine or something like that.
Which was the opposite with all the other kids. If you gave them, all of his friends and his playmates, if you gave them candy or caffeine, they'd bounce off the walls for the next 3 hours.
That's a trick. He's just tricking you people to get free candy.
If I act like it's calming
I'm crazy. Give me some candy. I'm crazy.
There's a little Ken Crash there again. I like that.
Not quite.
I hear it all the time now.
I know. I can't do a soft, slow voice without you thinking it's Ken Kratz now.
Yeah. Well, anyways, there's that. And what else? Oh, yeah, leave us those voicemails. We love those. Also, emails are fine, too. Filmsack@gmail.com. Next week, Bad Boys 2, the action 2-hour and 30-minute epic Bad Boys 2. piece of business there from 2003. The last, I didn't know this, but it was the last collaboration between director Michael Bay and producer Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh, great. Really?
Yeah, they have not worked together since then, which totally surprised me.
Didn't Bruckheimer pass away, or am I?
No. He went on to doing all the Pirates movies and.
Oh right, who am I? Who was it that big action movie guy that passed away?
Not
Top Gun guy.
Ridley Scott. Oh no, not
Tony. What's his name?
Tony Scott, not Tony Scott.
No, it was somebody. No. It was like a Bruckheimer.
We talked about this like 10 movies ago or something. And what was it?
Was it Bruckheimer man? Kind of like that guy, kind of like those directors.
Yeah.
I can't think of
anyone. They were good
buddies
until.
Yeah, Tony Scott did die. He died.
Yeah. No, he did, but he's not the one I'm thinking of.
He jumped off a bridge or whatever. I can't remember either.
Anyway, call in. And,
Simpson?
Let us know.
Bruckheimer Simpson? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Bruckheimer Simpson?
Simpson Bruckheimer. Who was the. Because it didn't used to just be Bruckheimer at the end of that thing.
Right,
you'd like
right,
see.
Right.
Oh, it was like Bruckheimer and Bruckheimer kind of thing?
Yeah, there was another name.
Don Simpson died 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not him either.
Okay. I don't know who that is. You got me. But I hope for one day those two to get back together. And they are doing it. There's Bad Boys 3 is currently in production. And that could be a chance for those guys to get back together. We'll talk all about that next week.
Okay.
In the meantime, filmsack.com is the website. Voicemails 801-471-0462. Again, email us at filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, follow us at Filmsack and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully positively.
That's vote for us on Podcast Alley.
At Podcast Alley, the podcast pickle. Wow, it's like 2006 up in here, man. Weird. ELR's not even over. We got 3 more years of this thing.
Right.
That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. See you next time.
You have the gift.
You have the gift.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.